Hello and welcome to The Stack. On this week's show, we'll teach you a lesson in manners with Debrett's Lucy Hume. A title for all the runners out there. And we welcome back Rachel Arthur from Boom Saloon magazine. Enjoy the show. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis, and I am Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Coming up on the show, I speak with Simon Freeman from the running title Like the Wind, and I welcome back Rachel Arthur from Broom Saloon. But to start the show, I told you you would learn a little bit about manners today. Debrett's is the British authority when it comes to business and social etiquette. They also release several print books telling us how to behave properly. The latest installment is their guide to hosting and entertaining, with relevant COVID-19 updates, of course. I spoke to Debrett's Lucy Hume about the book and some etiquette tips for Christmas this year.
I think that having the opportunity just to have friends around for dinner, just a very simple, casual affair, will be something that we all really look forward to and possibly put a little bit more effort into than we might have done previously, just to lend that sense of occasion to something that for many of us this year has been a real rarity. And then obviously for large gatherings like weddings, christenings, many of those have been postponed or haven't been able to take place at all. So I think, fingers crossed, 2021 will look a little brighter on the social front.
Well, I want to be positive as well. Lucy, tell us a little bit more. You know, Debrett's, it's a very iconic brand. I'm so happy, you know, to have someone from Debrett's here on the show. But for those who don't know, Debrett's has 250 years of tradition here in the United Kingdom. Can you tell us in a brief way a little bit more about Debrett's?
Yeah, we were founded with the first edition of our peerage and baronetage in 1769, and that was a volume that existed right up until last year in print form. We decided to issue the final print edition last year, and we are taking it online, so we're looking at developing a digital subscriber platform for the peerage, and that's essentially a chronicle of the aristocracy in the UK. So all families, all titled families are featured in the book. In addition to that, we now offer etiquette coaching, business etiquette, and also social etiquette. So we work with clients, we work with teams and individuals as well, and we continue publishing etiquette guides.
And the interesting thing about etiquette, I'm sure, you know, throughout the history of Debrett's, that some of them, you know, they have to change in a way. And one of the things you mentioned in the book, for example, there is, you know, a session for dietary requirements. I'm pretty sure, Lucy, that, you know, since the last decade or so, this has become so important. Because before, I think, you know, you had one or two types of food and, you know, people perhaps didn't complain. But now I think this is quite different. Every time, even when I host friends in my house, I always ask, because there's usually someone, you know, they can't have dairy or the other can't eat meat or something like that. I think this is some of the recent changes, right?
Yeah, it can be really challenging, I find, if you're hosting a few different people, to accommodate everybody's dietary requirements. I mean, I'm not sure if there's any evidence to support the fact that it's a recent development, but it certainly feels that way. And the great thing, obviously, now is that there are so many places where it's quite easy to buy gluten-free, dairy-free products that certainly helps. But it's become a much more of an issue, I think, on the etiquette front, just to make sure that you're fully aware of your guests' dietary requirements and that you can cater for them without making them possibly feel left out by, you know, just serving up a side salad when everyone else is tucking into a lavish main course.
And at the same time, it's always nice to be polite. I have a friend, I mean, he's vegan, but he's a great cook as well. So when I go to his place, he does, you know, his little vegan offering, but there's also kind of, you know, sometimes meat with it. And I like that, you know, this kind of combination without being too preachy, which I think that should be the ideal one, right?
Yeah, I think it's about, you know, we always say that etiquette comes down to really making others feel at ease. It's not about pointing out fault or making distinctions between cultures or people. It's really just having the confidence to make your guests feel comfortable and knowing that you're providing for them in the best possible way and not making them feel kind of different or left out in any way.
And Lucy, the book is great for all sorts of occasions. I mean, there's a session for Easter, but of course we need to talk about Christmas. I mean, it's coming soon. And I think this year, you know, we don't know yet how is it going to look like. But do you have any tips, I mean, for this Christmas? I mean, you know, for example, one of the things, I think I read an article that perhaps you commented on, that please don't eat while you're doing a video call, right?
Possibly many people might feel that should go unsaid, but yeah, I mean, none of us really know what to expect from Christmas this year, but I think we can say with some certainty that it might look different from previous Christmases. And things that have become the norm this year, you know, like the family Zoom call, will probably be a feature. And so, yeah, we do recommend just taking a little bit of time away from your phone or your computer screen on the day, if possible, to really kind of enjoy the day with those in the immediate vicinity that you're hosting, if you're able to, obviously. And for those people who may have to spend Christmas alone, just thinking about them and dropping them a phone call, you know, putting a Christmas card through their letterbox, or even having a kind of socially distanced chat on the doorstep, might just be what makes all the difference to their Christmas day.
Well, absolutely. One thing that I'm curious, I mean, I'm glad I'm talking here to an expert, but of course we live in London, I mean, quite an international city. It's quite interesting to see sometimes even the cultural differences when you're organizing, you know, a dinner at home. Because, for example, I have to say I'm from Brazil. I was very shocked when I moved here how people eat so early. And, you know, and there's all of those kind of things that you have to kind of manage as well. You know, not only the dietary restrictions, but, you know, different nationalities even, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things about living in a multicultural city, is that you do get to experience different traditions at a time of year like Christmas, when people celebrate it in completely different ways. You know, some people place more emphasis on Christmas Eve, whereas in the UK it's traditional to have a big meal on Christmas Day itself. So I think that's a real advantage, and hopefully in years to come, when we are allowed to spend Christmas with bigger groups, those different traditions can be kind of incorporated and respected. And obviously everybody has their own idea of what Christmas means and wants to uphold their own traditions. But I think it's nice to recognize other people's as well.
You know, another thing that I would like to say, I mean, of course, I mentioned that today many people can host because of the restrictions. But there is a session in the book about outdoor entertaining, which, you know, it became very relevant in recent weeks, even in the restaurant scene here in London or in other cities around the world. And I think it's great that you had the session there in the book as well. Do you have any tips about that, about outdoor entertaining?
Yeah, I mean, this has certainly been the year of the park gathering and picnics and barbecues. So, I mean, if it's an option at Christmas time, we're telling people, go for it. You know, take celebrations outside, get your flask of mulled wine and your plastic-backed picnic rug, and wrap up warm and meet up with people if possible for some al fresco festivities. I think, you know, the issue with any kind of al fresco entertaining is that your surroundings can slightly detract from the food or from the company. So it's good just to bear in mind that those things are still important. And if you're hosting, for example, in your back garden, just to remember that, just not to neglect your guests, essentially make sure that they're comfortable, that they've got plenty to eat and drink.
And Lucy, one of the things that I was reading, of course, I think the drink section is very important, because I think, you know, to serve refreshments or, you know, good quality alcohol is very important in a party. But one thing I learned personally, I do love a good cocktail, but it's quite hard, actually, if you're offering cocktails in your house. I think sometimes it's easier to go with champagne or a nice bottle of wine, right? Or only if you're very dedicated, I guess.
Yes. Well, in fact, my husband is a big fan of cocktails, and it does lend an evening a sense of kind of, I think it can elevate things a little bit at the beginning if you're having a small group and you're able to offer cocktails. But as you say, it can mean that one person is slaving away trying to prepare them for everybody, especially if people have different ordered. But you could do it. You could always keep it simple with, you know, a Negroni or something. So if possible, then great. If not, like you say, just a chilled glass of champagne is the great way to start an evening.
And in the book also you mention about, you know, overnight stays. I mean, again, that's something that, you know, is quite challenging as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of good tips in the book because, you know, it is a bit awkward sometimes when you go to someone's house. You want to do the right thing. But, you know, again, talking about refreshments, one of your tips is always offer refreshments to your guests. And I think that's the essential one.
Yeah, I think as a guest in somebody else's home, you never really know what the boundaries are. It's tricky. It can be awkward to, if you're feeling hungry, to ask for something to eat or drink. And so as the host, it's really just a case of anticipating those demands and just, yeah, thinking about your guests. Even if you're not hungry yourself, they might be. So without obviously plying them with food and drink constantly, just occasionally offering a cup of tea or a biscuit, or, you know, in between meals, just to keep that level of hospitality going throughout the weekend.
And Lucy, talking at the brass in general, do you think the UK is still a powerhouse when it comes, you know, to etiquette?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think etiquette is fascinating for the very reason, for the fact that it varies so greatly between cultures and nations. And really, it's again not about kind of setting yourself above other people or purporting to be kind of superior. It's really just making people feel comfortable, I think, and understanding other people's practices and traditions. There's obviously the possibly apocryphal story about the Queen on noticing that somebody had made the faux pas of drinking from their finger bowl. She then proceeded to do likewise, just to make them feel like they hadn't made a massive etiquette error. So, you know, whether or not that story is true, it's kind of a good illustration, I think, of what etiquette should mean.
That was Lucy Hume there. The Brat's Guide to Hosting and Entertaining is out now. And now to an activity that more and more people are taking it, running. Although there are few print titles about the topic, Like the Wind is perhaps the most beautiful of them. Instead of telling us how to run, it explores why we run. With great design, interesting personal stories, and exquisite photography, the title launched its 25th issue recently, and the 26th edition will come out soon. I spoke to Like the Wind co-founder Simon Freeman.
There's lots of people that have started running more, perhaps, or even for the first time. And I mean, honestly, I think it's because it's such an easy, accessible thing to do. You can literally go out your front door and be running, and it takes away the need to meet with other people or have any facilities or any or very much kit. So, I think running has benefited while so many other people have not, unfortunately.
And tell us, Simon, I mean, the magazine now is in its issue 25, so clearly is a success story. When you launched the title back in 2014, do you think there was a need for a magazine like this? Because, you know, I know there are some other running magazines, but, you know, it's all about, you know, how you have to run, a lot of stats and kind of, but this is quite different. This is quite gentle, even for a non-runner, at least at the moment, like me, there's quite a lot of interesting stories there that I think, you know, as I said, even people that don't run every day, probably would enjoy.
Sure. I mean, we took inspiration from journals that we'd seen in other sports, in other places. So there was surfing journals and cycling journals that just really seemed to talk about the spirit of the sport more than perhaps the mechanics. And we just wanted to, it was curiosity, honestly, we just wanted to find out whether there was an appetite for that in running, which thankfully it turns out there is.
And tell us about how was 2020 for you when it comes to the magazine? Of course, it's been, you know, a very challenging year for magazine editors everywhere. But what about Like the Wind in terms of your business model? Is it very much through subscriptions, or if you can tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, of course. So fortunately, we have always been primarily focused on subscriptions. We weren't particularly well distributed on newsstand. We're in lots of specialist magazine retailers and in quite a few specialist running shops, but we weren't in the kind of mainstream high street magazine newsstand. So we were always aiming to be a reader-supported publication, and actually it's set us in very good stead because it's meant that our customer base has grown significantly during 2020, whilst obviously a lot of the newsstand was closed for periods of time all over the world. So we've actually done okay from that point of view. And also being reader-supported, we only have a very small number of brands that support the magazine as kind of sponsors. So again, we don't rely very heavily on advertising revenue. So we didn't really feel the pinch all that much.
Well, that's great news to hear. And about the new issue as well, I think it's a fantastic issue. I love that story about the man going through America 3,700 miles. But tell us about some of the highlights, especially, I mean, the cover is beautiful as well. It's very happy cover, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that... one of the things that we're always interested in is striking that balance between dealing with some things that are almost global issues, but we look at them through the lens of running, and they can be pretty sort of sobering. So we look at, we've talked about things like gender issues, racism, the environment, you know, the impact of running from the point of view of plastic pollution, for example, or the impact of air pollution on runners. Obviously, the whole Black Lives Matter movement was huge in running. And then we tried to balance that because actually running is joyful. So we try and have some really good fun pieces. I mean, we've had pieces about a guy who signed up to run a 10K, not realizing that it was in a naturist resort. And everyone was obviously just wearing a pair of running shoes and nothing else. So we try and keep some sort of fun, and because ultimately running is a joyful experience.
And where do you run these days, actually, Simon? Sorry, just out of curiosity, I mean, do you prefer to run in parks or in the middle of the city, perhaps? Especially now, actually, I have to say, because the cities are a little bit emptier now. So I'm sure, I have a feeling that for runners, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, it certainly isn't. I mean, apart from anything else, the air pollution issue has improved significantly. I used to be a pavement pounder. I was always about trying to run a faster marathon. Now I'm much more into just going for a run for the joy. So I'll try and hit the trails as much as possible, probably slightly better for knees and ankles to not be pounding the pavements all the time. But, you know, I like to mix it up. Anywhere, anytime is my motto.
Well, you mentioned knees and ankles. I mean, I do like running, but, you know, I had some sort of injury. And you were telling me, I mean, you don't need to mention brands, but one of the secrets as well for a good run is actually, you know, what you're wearing. I mean, which shoes are you wearing? I think this can definitely, you know, be the secret for a good run, right?
Well, yeah, but I think there's a few ingredients. I think one of the things that, and I'm not a coach, so I'm not offering advice, but I think that one of the things that people sometimes do, and I was guilty of this, is too much too soon when they start out. And there's no shoes or knee supports that are going to kind of make up for somebody going from zero to hero. So, you know, being judicious about how you get into running and maybe starting with even run walk is a great way to just get into it. But yeah, the right shoes definitely help. The wrong shoes definitely don't help.
That's good to know. And coming back to the title, you know, I was mentioning the cover story that was very happy. And then, of course, it's a visual and audio retrospective of the 2016 US Track and Field Olympic Trials. It's quite nostalgic as well because, you know, this year we were supposed to have the Tokyo 2020. I love watching the Olympics. So it's kind of, that's why I think perhaps it made me so happy. It's kind of a nice memory here and lovely photography as well.
Yeah, David Brechetti, who was the photographer behind that project, is a really talented guy and a very useful runner in his own right. So he shoots the subjects in a very sympathetic way because he kind of understands what it feels like to win and to lose in whatever that means. So that particular photo essay was really interesting because some people he was shooting immediately having followed the trials and they had just been confirmed as having won a place for the Olympic team and others had just lost out. So it's a really mixed bag of emotions that he's capturing through the lens.
That was Simon Freeman from Like the Wind. Their new issue is out now. Finally on the show, I welcome back on the stack Rachel Arter, editor of Bung Salung magazine. The creative title is back with a new issue, looking more beautiful than ever. I spoke to Rachel about the changes in the title and the highlights of the new issue.
We again worked with an incredible team of contributors from all around the world, and we have an all-new design team for this issue. So we definitely wanted to take the time to do that justice and make sure that we had all of the plates spinning across the multiple things that we do. Obviously, our community projects sit at the core of our offering. And based on a lot of things that have happened recently, we had to rework a lot of plans around those. And we were initially planning to have the issue at the start of this year. But I suppose one of the joys of being truly independent is that you can dig your heels in and say, actually, I'm going to wait and do what we know is best for this project. So we bid our time and took a much more slow, considered approach. And I'm really delighted with the outcome of that. So yeah, very, very happy to be out there now.
Remind us, to some listeners who perhaps don't know Bon Salon, what is the title about? What's the whole idea behind this project?
Absolutely. So we work to democratize creativity for good and showcase an incredibly broad spectrum of talent from all different walks of life from all around the world, and utilize the profits from both our print magazine and our creative studio to support a series of community-led projects. And as I said, they're really our kind of reason for being. They sit at the very core of our business, and they're all about using creativity to inspire and empower. So we work with all different groups. We've worked with young people previously. Our current project is all about rewriting the story of dementia. So a very different demographic. As I touched on, we have had to do a lot of pivoting with this project, which initially was working within care homes, which I'm sure everyone will know were very, very devastatingly hit during everything that has gone on with COVID. But we're now delivering in a much more direct manner and ensuring that everything that we produce will be available to care homes at a time which best suits them going forward. So yeah, lots of things on the go as ever.
Well, and as ever, the magazine remains quite international. I know you're based in Scotland and there's quite a lot of lovely stories from there. But, you know, there's also, you know, Addis Ababa, you know, I love that about Bon Salon. I remember even the last issue, there was kind of a Brazilian connection there as well.
Yes, there was, just for you. No, it's really important to us to work with people from all around the world and to have this very global outlook. I'm always incredibly humbled with the people who believe in what we're doing and come on board to be a part of that. And, you know, what was really interesting for me was I'll hold my hands up and say that in the past, I've potentially been a bit guilty of overlooking the things which were closer to home. And just with everything that's happened, you know, everyone's had to look a bit more internally lately. And it's really opened my eyes to the incredible talents that I know and have worked with every day. So it was really nice to showcase a selection of those in this issue amongst a much more global talent base as well.
And the quality of photography in this issue is just amazing. I mean, it is, as I say, when I was mentioning, you know, the cover, the color choices, you know, the model, it's really, really striking. I love the story, the crowning of Black identity. I mean, you worked with amazing photographers as well.
Yes, absolutely. Incredible talents. And I mean, what's so meaningful to me is that there's a story and a connection behind each and every one of those features. So I think it's lovely that you could pick it up not knowing that, and it still stands alone as an incredible piece of print. But it feels very personal, this issue as well. I think it allowed me to meet many kindred spirits, Lucanio Madingi in particular, the designer whose work features as part of our cover story. You know, we just have very similar ways of thinking, even though he's in Cape Town and we've never met. And again, you know, even being closer to home, the likes of Jess and Philippa Elliott, I think they have really, really nice ways of thinking, which is interesting because we didn't actually use any photography to support that. But I think their thought processes and their artistic approaches and practices are, you know, they're strong enough on their own to really capture your attention and draw you in. So I'm really proud of, yeah, the photography within this issue, but also the kind of thoughts that back all of that up.
And, you know, are you already planning, like what next? I know COVID-19, you said you were thinking to release this one earlier in the year, but of course, it's been a very challenging period for many publishers and editors. Do you think things will go back perhaps a bit more to normal next year?
Oof, I don't think there will ever be a normal for Bimsley in the most, you know, incredible way. Yes, we have a number of features already lined up for the next issue, which is a lovely position to be in. We actually were pretty overrun with features for this issue, which is why it is our biggest to date. We normally sit around 160. I think this one is 184 pages. So there's a lot of meaty topics in there. But yeah, we still have the kind of groundwork laid for the next issue as well. Really, really pleased with everything the team has produced for this one. So I think building upon that will be a real pleasure. And in terms of the future and advancement, we have some really exciting studio work in the pipeline, which will be in print, which is always our favorite. And, you know, it's such a topsy-turvy time at the moment, and it's so hard to know and to forward plan and think how things will pan out. So I feel incredibly lucky to be going into next year feeling in a really good place with things.
And for this issue in particular, how is the kind of distribution? I mean, do you have subscribers, or are you selling perhaps more in your website? You know, tell us, because I know there's been some challenges because some places that sell magazines, actually, they had to close for a period.
Yes, absolutely. We're doing everything we can to support our incredible stockists that we have around the world in a number of different ways. So switching up things with our standard orders so that we can still work with them and, you know, have their support, which means so much to us. And then we also self-distribute through our website. So we are manning that ourselves at the moment, which is, yeah, you know, distribution is always one of the biggest challenges of any print publication. But I think making sure that you can nurture those relationships. And what's really, really lovely for us is that each and every one of our stockists directly supports the projects, because all of our profits go to those. So I think that's a really nice kind of additional thing to add in, and just helps to build the sense of community.
That was Rachel Arter from Boom Saloon. Issue 5 is out now. Well, that's it for this week's show. My thanks to our editor, Nora Hall. And if you have any comments or queries, feel free to write to me, Fernando, at fp@monocle.com. And remember, we're back next Saturday at the same time. And of course, you can always listen to it again at monocle.com or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and SoundCloud. But before we go, a little song for you. This is Brenda Fassi with Romantic World. You've been listening to The Stack. I'm Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.